Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Robert F. Kennedy and the prophet Joseph Smith were both killed while campaigning for President of the United States of America. It's one of the most unique events in American history, and we'll talk more about that with Dr. Derek Sainsbury, who's written the book Storming the Nation. We'll talk also about other similarities that Joseph Smith may have had to modern politicians. How did he compare? Check out our conversation. Hey, I just wanted to mention one more thing. The Mormon News Report podcast is an awesome podcast, and they cover the week in Mormon news with a healthy dose of snark and commentary. Join Brant and Jenny every Monday to get caught up on all those news stories that you can stay up to date on the latest Mormon news. So check out Mormon News Report. It's a great podcast. Brant and Jenny are great friends. Now back to our conversation.
He becomes the first candidate in the history of the United States, first presidential candidate to be assassinated. And the news of his assassination takes up to 2 weeks to reach the missionaries. Sometimes a longer if they're in, you know, some places in Vermont and Maine. Before that news reaches, both before his assassination and after his assassination, before the news hits the papers in the East, they're making a wake, and they're finding surprising success in some places and very strong hostility in other places. And so it's not like nobody knew what was going on. Things were happening, right? And it's just as it's starting to get some kind of momentum that the news reaches that he's been assassinated. And so in kind of a sad anticlimactic moment, several of the apostles and a couple of other electioneers go down to Baltimore on the date of July 13th.
And, so this is 2 weeks after Joseph's been killed.
Yeah, and they've just found out. And they still go to the hall they rented in Baltimore, and they open the convention, do nothing, and close it, and start heading back. And it's kind of a sad
moment. So they did know before they did the convention?
Yeah, that's why they didn't do anything. They still felt, it was actually the day before, they're in Wilmington, Delaware, the day before they're headed down there is when they'd heard reports, and there have been newspaper reports, but when they receive the special edition of the Nauvoo Neighbor that says what's happened.
Okay, because a lot of them didn't believe it.
Right, because there have been rumors all the time of this and that had happened back with Joseph Smith all the way, you know, since Missouri. And so they didn't believe it at first, couldn't believe it at first. And that was kind of for that group and for a lot of groups when they got that special edition of the Nauvoo Neighbor that said that he had been killed. And it is devastating for them.
Yeah,
absolutely devastating.
I mean, I think the closest modern day equivalent is probably Bobby Kennedy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, that's the next book I'm already writing is
a
comparison between those two.
Oh, wow. That'll be interesting.
Because he's the only other candidate, right?
Wallace got shot, but he didn't die.
Yeah. So.
Oh, really? So those are the only two people that have been killed is Joseph Smith and Bobby Kennedy?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's your trivia question when you're on Jeopardy.
Wow. That's really interesting.
So it's actually that they're finding out about that. For me, that's the most powerful chapter in my book.
Yes.
It is just riveting to me what they read and what they experience and the anger, the sadness, the disbelief, the comfort from visions and dreams to the I'd like to be Samson and just sink this whole steamboat of people that are cheering his death. Just this, but it does something to them. Here they've been out preaching the gospel and advocating theodemocracy, right? And for three quarters of them, this is the first mission they've ever been on, or for two thirds of them, excuse me, this is the first mission they've ever been on. And they're in interaction with each other, interaction with the general public, and interaction with the Quorum of the Twelve, who are out there going to these different conferences. As you read their journals, you know, Elder Woodruff showed up today, da, 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 you know, kind of a thing. And so when they return disheartened to Nauvoo, and the succession crisis happens, when Brigham Young comes out on top of that in Nauvoo for that time period, you have this almost ready-made group of men and one woman, by the way, that went.
Only one woman, that's it?
Well, there were I'm going to forget, but like 10 to 12 couples that went out, the men that took their wives. But there's only one we know was given the call to actually preach an electioneer. Wow. And that we have evidence that she preached an electioneer along with her husband. And so that's why I threw her in, and the other ones I didn't, because we don't know what they did, if they just tagged along or, you know, huh, what they did.
Interesting.
But anyway, you have this group, most of them come back to Nauvoo, and they share trauma. We know this psychologically, that people that share a trauma together bond together. They've shared that trauma with the 12 out doing what? Preaching the gospel, preaching politicking theodemocracy. And immediately, that fall of 1844, this group of men starts to be used very disproportionately to their other peers in the church in leadership positions.
Now, that's interesting, because a lot of times, especially when we talk about church history, we talk about Zion's Camp and how Zion's Camp was kind of the training ground of a lot of the leaders of the church. But that was one of the interesting things about your book that I think that nobody's ever really explored, is these electioneers were all, I mean, would you say that they surpassed the Zion's Camp as far as leadership and future leadership of the church?
I would say it's similar. It's similar in the sense, I mean, with Zion's Camp, you have the whole first quorum of 70 called, right? And I believe it's 8 of the 12. I could be wrong with that, but a majority of the 12 come from Zion's Camp. So, I mean, that's a direct, you know, kind of a direct line there. That become leaders thereafter. It's not that big and direct as it is with Zion's Camp, but it's bigger, if that makes sense. It's wider.
Okay.
Because there's more people involved.
Do we have any idea how many people were involved in Zion's Camp?
There were a little over 100 that marched on.
Okay,
Zion's
so this
camp.
Is six
or 200,
times.
Excuse me, 200.
Okay, so it's 200. So this is three times larger than Zion's Camp.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that's part of it. And they didn't go as a group, right? They weren't all together in one place like Zion's Camp was. Zion's Camp would have reunions every year when they got out to the West. They would have reunions every year until the last one passed away. There are no reunions for the electioneers. The bond they had from the shared trauma was to the cause and to maybe a companion or the 12 or whatever. But and we don't have any kind of statement where the Brigham Young and the 12 are going, yes, we are purposely choosing the electioneer missionaries. But you do the math, and they're overwhelmingly, and you'll see it in the book, I've got charts and tables and all that stuff, they're overwhelmingly used right away for leadership positions in the time they spend in Nauvoo, leadership positions in moving the saints out west. And then when they get out west, we're looking to start the world anew. We're looking to create Zion from the ground up. And the theodemocracy that the way these missionaries looked at this, and the way Brigham Young and the 12 looked at this, is the United States has rejected religious salvation. They've rejected political salvation. You know, we're out of here, and we'll go build it. And that's what they start to do, up to the point of creating the state of, you know, the provisional state of Deseret. And it is a theodemocracy, because what happens is, if you're, for instance, let's start at the top. If you're the president of the church, you're also the governor. If you're a member of the Quorum of the 12, you're in the legislative council, right? If you're another kind of what we would call general authorities today, you're most likely in the legislative assembly. If you're the mayor of a not a huge town like Salt Lake, but any other town, if you're the bishop of let's say you're the bishop of Provo, you're also going to be the mayor of Provo, right? And so this theodemocracy it just is created out here in the West.
You're also going to be the judge.
Right. You're also going to often be the probate judge or the justice of the peace. And it goes further than that, too, because if you're a leader, you're expected to practice plural marriage. And if you practice plural marriage, by the way they distributed land, right? There's no land for sale when you did this new settlements. It was given by lots. And men with multiple wives were given a lot for each wife, right? And so if you're a religious leader, called to be a religious leader, you're also going to be a political leader. You're also going to be practicing plural marriage, so you're going to be having more land. And you're also going to be connected to these other men, right? Back from before, back from your mission, and now in this web of theodemocracy, to have more economic opportunity. And so that's the other thing I found, is that they're more likely to have, they're more likely to be religious leaders, which means they're more likely to be political leaders, which means they're more likely to practice plural marriage, which means they're more likely to have real estate, more wealth than their neighbors. And it continues for several decades, this group, where they're not the only ones, right, that are in these callings and stuff, but compared to the rest of the priesthood available at that time, whichever time period you look at, way outnumber their peers. And to me, it just makes sense, because they're wedded to this idea of building Zion, which at that point included this idea of a theodemocracy, a political structure that grows out of and protects the church, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes total sense, yeah. So it was interesting. Do you think that these men had any idea that being called to be an electionary missionary would lead to all these other things?
No.
Bishops, landowners, polygamy?
No, because, to me, that the amazing thing about reading their journals and about reading the newspaper reports from Nauvoo, and now even the Council of 50 Minutes, the private things that were being said by the leaders of the church, they expected to win. They left, and you listen to the church leaders when they trained them before they left. The idea was that there was going to be this divine power that would go with them, right? And that they were going to not only convert religiously, but convert politically. And so there was this real upbeatness about it. It wasn't this, oh, I'm going to go do this. There was,
we're going to win.
We're going to win. Okay. And every campaign's going to feel that way. Right? I mean, obviously. But you tie religion into that and a prophet into it too. And there's almost this expectation, right, that this is where this is headed. So, so when he dies, none of them are thinking, this is going to lead to all of this. But it's a very natural extension of their missions to then become leaders out here in the West.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Derek Sainsbury. In our next conversation, we'll talk about the missionaries who were called to serve and help Joseph Smith run for President of the United States. In our next conversation, we'll talk about how Joseph Smith's platform of gradual emancipation went over on the South.
And Mrs. Camp, 6 foot, 200 pounds.
She's a big woman.
Yells at the sheriff, who's Mr. Caldwell, Sheriff Caldwell, who's kind of in charge of this mob, and says, if you touch one of those elders, I will see your heart blood. It's an amazing story. And one of the other mob guys says, knock her down.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents. And for just $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruption. If you'd like a paperback version of our transcripts, go to amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview. Also, if you'd like to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website, and I'll be able to send you a transcript as soon as they are completed, and click the subscribe button. You can also find our latest information on facebook.com/gospeltangents, as well as we're on Twitter @gospeltangents. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. The link is at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents, and you can subscribe there. Also, please give us a 5-star review. If you want to support all of the podcasts as part of the Dialogue Podcast Network, go to lyceum.fm, that's lyceum.fm, and do a search for Dialogue Podcast Network or Gospel Tangents, because, that's a pretty cool one too. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.